Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nezvedarani, your host for this hour of Speak Up Only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And before we start with today's episode, I just want to acknowledge that this program and all of our programs here at CJSF are broadcasted on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. And we're going to start off today's episode how I usually like to start off an episode of Speak Up, with not a lot of speaking, but some singing, some music. This is from local Vancouver band Computer, the band Computer, off their latest album, Station on the Hill. I like that album name, maybe because we're also a station on the hill, but regardless, this is their track, Concrete Vehicles. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
right, we are back with Speak Up, only on a CJSF 90.1 FM. The last track was Concrete Vehicles by the band Computer. Bit of a heavy way to start that morning. I didn't really give much of a warning or preamble before the track, but hopefully you're all awake now. And we can get started with this hour of talk, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This first piece is an interview that I did recently with an artist and ethnobotanist and educator by the name of Sanaquila Wiss. And I spoke with Sanaquila a few days ago about her involvement with the Coastal Dance Festival, which is happening starting today in New Westminster. And I was able to speak with her about the dance group that she is in with her mother, Cece Weiss, as well as her children as well. And I thought that was like a really cool concept to be able to incorporate just, like the knowledge passed on from generation to generation all within this specific group. So I wanted to speak with her about it, and we did. So you can see her perform, I think, today at the Coastal Dance Festival. And here is that interview. Just to start, if you'd be able to just provide like an introduction of yourself and the work you do, as well as your involvement this year with the Coastal Dance Festival.
All right. Hat Squile Tanoya Sanakula Kuyansna Tanachintla Sahan Ohumeo A Squamishchin. My name is Sanakula Weiss. I'm from the Squamish Nation. Part of my kind of through my life of learning our language has mostly been as an adult speaker through our immersion program offered with the Squamish Nation and SFU. So for myself, only becoming more fluent of a speaker as an adult has been a journey that part of our dance group, we call ourselves Chisha Eichlamunds, the mother and her daughter. And so it started just as my mom and I, and then my grandma had passed away a couple years ago now, but she was able to join us for about 4 or 5 years too. She had battled like cancer and different health issues, but she would be able to still come join us on stage. And as her being a residential school survivor, it was just very difficult. She couldn't speak the language, even though she grew up speaking it until she attended residential school. So for us, and then my children also joined over the years. So for her to see her great-grandchildren, speak our introduction or share the songs and language, that was very special for us. A few of our years performing, especially with Coastal Dance Festival, as being four generations. But of course, she passed away 2 years ago. But for us, always having this kind of tradition that we've been attending as performers, maybe for about 10 years or more with Coastal Dance Festival. So for us, it's a really special occasion, not only for us to join, but it's also been really wonderful just seeing all the different talent that they bring in as well. It's been really special, both from local, nearby nations. There's even been international indigenous performers, from Maori people to a lot of different groups. So for us, we've been actually able to network and meet other indigenous artists as well. I've got my daughter Lila with me, our newest member. She's 6 months old.
Wow. That's amazing. When I looked into that, I was really curious because, you've been doing this for so long, and I'm wondering for you if like the dynamics or your feelings around it have changed since your own children became introduced to it, because at a certain point you were the youngest member, I believe, and now you were sort of taking on that familial parent role as part of it, mm-hmm. as well, and I'm wondering how that has sort of changed the experience for you.
I think it's been really exciting. For myself, I thought like as like a teenager, as a youth, I didn't really know that kind of like the world might be interested in learning about different parts of indigenous culture. And that's kind of how my mom just kind of nurtured me and dragged me along into kind of attending the events at the beginning. And it really was cool to just see, whether it was to the public or there was ones that we did for school field trips attending at the Museum of Anthropology at UBC, of just really seeing that for us, I sometimes just always thought everybody knew maybe about cultural teachings, or we do other work about like plant walks or sharing about our knowledge, that it kind of really resonated for me to take a step back and see that we hadn't always really had that opportunity to be the teachers ourselves. And so I think whether it is to the public or when we had performances of like to school groups, for me to really see the importance that we are able to share a bit of who we are through our dancing and singing, and just it also just kind of incorporates storytelling about like local place, about name and languages, that really helps, I think, kind of give that firsthand kind of building relationships with our local or kind of even with the global community as well of people who come and attend the festival. Yeah, so just for me of kind of seeing over the years of it kind of just being like an exciting, like one day kind of, I don't know, more of like a field trip idea to now is kind of like we're preparing every year for me, like preparing my children's regalia and making sure that they learn like kind of the importance of like caring for our regalia and like learning the different aspects of weaving our own headbands or parts of what we're going to be wearing, and taking pride of like how we introduce ourselves and how we share like where we come from, that it's a really kind of big part about just having a lot of pride and not like, for me, growing up like in East Vancouver, sometimes it was like, should we not talk about where we're from? Should we have this like it wasn't always like the most big community in my schools, for example, about Indigenous other students. But I think for now, like my children grew up in our Squamish Nation school, so they have more of our close community, I think, than I did growing up. But just really seeing that pride of who we are anywhere, no matter where in our community or out showing the world. Yeah.
It's really cool to just hear about that progression and how I think I saw like that it was in writing that it's your children that are going to be like the first generation of like completely fluent speakers of the language.
Yeah. For when I started taking the language program, my older daughter, Kamea, she's turning 10 this year, but she was 2 at the time. So she was a little bit delayed in her speech. And so it was actually cool to see her. We would always both use American Sign Language, but also we had to kind of create our own Squamish sign language during the program, because we really utilize sign language as part of learning it and remembering a lot better. So it was really cool for myself to watch my daughter from 2 years old learning, and like just a really funny moment that we went out to eat breakfast and then everyone was ordering. I think she was maybe 4 or something, but the waiter was like, what would you like to eat? And she's like, I'll get the OOs. And that means eggs in our language. And then I was kind of laughing that to her, it was just like naturally we call eggs OOs, but just being out in the real world at a moment where someone's like, what is she? Sometimes like, oh, she's just calling it eggs in our Squamish language. So for me, especially seeing my grandmother, my grandma always tried to teach me growing up, even though she survived residential school, that she couldn't speak it. What we still acknowledge the elders, if they don't actively speak it out loud, that they still are silent speakers. So whether or not they can carry out a conversation, they still carry that within them. And it's still like they have a lot of knowledge to share, and that kind of worldview where the language is not just a translation from English into our language, but it's a really big part of our worldview, how we see the world, and kind of those relationships. Those are also part of our language and our culture, and just seeing that those are kind of different perspectives that our language helps us to see the world in.
Absolutely. Language is so much bigger than just characters on a page, right? It's mm-hmm. it's a translation of culture and feeling and connection. Mm-hmm. So I really like how you put that, you know, the sort of like the silent speakers of the language as well, even if like academically it wouldn't be considered.
Yeah, because my grandma was really focused on making sure we knew our genealogy. So like her perspective of understanding how we see like a family, like we might see our cousins as more siblings than like first, second, third cousins. So that worldview that we see our family and community is also part of whether she could name the word for sister or not, like she still knew that relationship of what kind of our worldview would have been with a family tree, for example.
Again, looking into the performances that you've done, one thing I thought was interesting is because it's meant to sort of weave together the different cultural backgrounds of your family. So Squamish, Stolo, Tsimshian, Hawaiian, and Swiss as well. And I guess I'm just curious of like what the process of going about that is, like of what aspects and how that kind of comes together for you.
Yeah, we sometimes have like kind of a, like a short list, I guess, of certain songs that we like to share, but we do sometimes try to focus on kind of the matriarchal or kind of empowering of our women's song. And then for my husband's side, my children are also Lowat Nation, so we'll sometimes share the women's warrior song, which is from the Lowat Nation. But sometimes, like we've sang the paddle song, which goes back to kind of recognizing part of our history within Vancouver of the fire in Vancouver, and it was kind of at the more beginning of the colonial contact time where nuns were doing a translation of hymns into the Squamish language. So it was mostly women at the village of Sahan, which is Lower Lonsdale near Mosquito Creek, St. Paul's Church. And so it was mostly all women there translating our Squamish language and into these songs, and then that's when they saw the fire break out. So it was actually women canoeing over from the Mosquito Creek Marina area, rescuing people in canoes from the fire in the kind of gas town area. So to us, of these kind of hidden stories that not everyone may know the history in Vancouver, and we had shared that, and we actually had somebody say that that was their ancestors who were saved by the Squamish women in that fire. So to us, it was quite moving of hearing the story, but have someone reach out that they were on a different end, I guess, of knowing that history themselves. But some people have never heard of that story too. So it's kind of nice to share different parts of that relationship that Squamish people have with the local communities nearby. Yeah. And then I guess another song we do is the pollinator song. So it's just to bring that kind of our appreciation of Mother Nature and of pollinators and of people who teach about plants, that we always give thanks to the pollinators. That's a more recently composed song.
Okay. And that's going to be one of the parts of the performance at the Coastal Dance Festival?
Yes.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Another thing I had seen is like a big part of your practice is ethnobotany, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, because, and I don't know if I'm, you know, out of my depth here, but I'm wondering if there are, like, to you, any sort of similarities or connections that can be drawn between ethnobotany and the philosophy of it and movement and dance that you've ever considered or thought of.
Yeah, well, I think kind of that slow movement of plants, but they still are very much like live and moving. And one of the interesting kind of parts with cedar trees are kind of our tree of life, that we see the cedar boughs. If you can kind of picture the branches, they come down and then they come back up. And it's kind of like, if you look at like our welcome figures, it's a person with their arms raised up. So it's almost like what we call raising our hands, or we say kayachin, that it looks like people as Coast Salish culture, we raise our hands kind of in recognition or honor, or like saying thank you, or a welcome gesture. That it's also something that we reflect in plants and in nature, of seeing a lot of similarities from plants into the human body, whether it's like the berries with red colors being really good for your heart, for example, or just seeing those connections of plants and nature to people, rather than being separate from nature, I just seeing those similarities between nature and people.
Those were the main questions I'd had regarding the performance. I guess one thing I was curious about was if there are any aspects or lessons or philosophies that you hope people are able to take away from the performance.
I guess for me, I'm just really kind of seeing the practice and the art that goes into sharing our songs and our storytelling, and something that kind of resonates with me about especially all of the different languages that we share as well in the festival, of just thinking how our language really reflects who we are and the land. Like often we say, like in our Squamish language, it's really reflecting like our mountain landscape and the ocean. And our kind of worldview is really deeply tied to specific areas within our landscape. So just seeing those different kind of cultural aspects that are really relevant. Yeah, that's mostly to just see that kind of connection that we have to. I don't know if you can hear, but there's like birds outside my window as I'm talking. So it's kind of just, yeah, seeing that kind of change of seasons we're in right now. And just seeing that kind of hopefulness of spring that's coming, of sharing our language.
Once again, that was my conversation with Sanaquila Weiss. And you can see her perform at the Coastal Dance Festival 2026 at the Anvil Theater in New Westminster in actually about 40 minutes. It's at 11 a.m. today, but it's going to be a week-long festival. The first day is going to be at the Anvil Theater in New Westminster, but afterwards, the main venue is going to be the Museum of Anthropology at UBC Vancouver. So from the 4th to 8th, there are a lot of other dance events and screenings and artist sharings happening. A lot of things that you can see for it. If you want to find out more, you can go to the Damla Hamid website, which is Damla, DAMELAHAMID.CA. That's DAMELAHAMID.CA. And yeah, really, really excited to hear about how that performance goes. And if you're able to check it out, please do. All right, coming up next, we have a piece coming out of Smithers, BC, from their LJI community journalist, Pam Hassan.
Jasmine Jack is Gitsan from Wilp Wiget and works alongside Don Mills on the Geoscience Gitsagukla program. In this interview, she explains her role in community engagement, supporting participants on the ground, connecting Hewlett members with training and industry opportunities, and helping bridge Indigenous knowledge and values with education and careers in the mining and geoscience sectors.
Hi, my name is Jasmine Jack. I'm from the Gitsan Territory.
We were just talking about what your part of Geoscience Gitsagukla is and your role in it. Let's start there. So tell me what your role in this program is.
I am the community engagement for Don. Don works down in Vancouver, and I'm here to be of assistance for the participants who are included.
Who are the participants?
They're roughly between the ages of 19 and 40. They are people who are looking to go into the mining industry and different aspects of the industry, and looking to further education towards the mining industry.
Something that you mentioned earlier as well was finding recent graduates as well to maybe help them take that next step. Can you expand on that a bit?
So one of the things that we are working on is we are targeting the students who have just left college to give them just another avenue of the mining industry, another economic avenue. It's not a big market down in our area. A lot of it is labor, and we just want to give them resources, help them break down barriers, and bridging that gap from Indigenous to mining industry.
How does that break down as far as numbers of participants in a year, and also what WILPs are also represented? Can you explain that?
Right now, this is, I would consider it as a pilot program. So Don has just introduced this into the Kitsagukla area. This is the first time I've seen it happen. What she is working towards is getting WILPs involved. And so each WILP was invited to bring on participants in the age range of like 19 to 30. And what they are doing is they want to strengthen WILPs in the industry. But the goal is to get 4 members from each WILP into 4-year degrees in any mining education industry. So geology, geoscience, And essentially that's what she's, that's where we're working on. So when I came in to work with Dawn, that was my understanding, was to strengthen each WILP into the market, but allowing them to understand what is happening at each level of the industry. Like I was saying, from prospecting to mining could be a 30-year aspect. And when we bridge that gap from the Indigenous communities, WILPs, into the industry, what we're essentially doing is just giving them the vocabulary and the knowledge by bringing them into places like the AME, like the Rock Talk, giving them that vocabulary, the information needed to understand what it takes and to align their goals. Because a lot of Indigenous communities have goals, values, they have jobs in their territory where it is to protect the land, to secure the land. It is not ours, we just protect it. And so we are helping them introduce themselves into the industry so that they can be a part of the conversation along the way from prospecting to an actual mine. They will have the knowledge to make informed decisions to, one, protect their territory, to, two, to make sure that their WILP is taken care of. So whether they have jobs, education, security, all of those kind of values that we all need to do. And then, but like just to have a seat at the table, a lot of people have to find other jobs. They can't sit here and wait for these things to happen. And I decided to stay with Dawn because Dawn has been one of the rare people who come in, say they're going to do something, offer education towards it, and then fulfill that duty. And with me working beside her, I've been able to see firsthand that what is said is being done and it is happening. And we have been able to contact an immense amount of opportunities for the participants, for jobs, job security, for job readiness, and like just invited to an abundance of places to introduce them to.
How long is this training or program, or is that modular? Can people pick and choose what areas they want to study and get exposed to?
So right now, it's like the portion that she initialized with us was the videos on like core cutting, on core logging, geotechnical services, geology services, and then move that to job readiness and then job placement. Unfortunately, the videos are taking longer than expected to make. So what we have done is we have just grabbed the participants and brought them to Silver Queen Mine, to AME. She has access to an XRF lab. And so now we're introducing them into that part. Kispiox has an education program out there. And so we've also introduced them into the first year of college courses in math, chemistry, and biology, and geology. And so introducing them into those areas. So they just have things to do while we're waiting for the videos. We are very fortunate because of the participants, because of the industry inviting us there. We've been able to see firsthand the logging, the core cutting, the drilling. So we've got to see firsthand without the videos.
Thank you so much for helping me understand this program even more and kind of the hands-on perspective of it.
Thank you.
UBC Professor Don Mills shared a presentation at Rock Talk 2026 about Geoscience Gitxigugla. This two-year community-driven critical minerals program brings together Indigenous knowledge and geoscience to study eight priority minerals. In the first year, HULIP members share knowledge of their Lachyip while completing hands-on geology training and field visits to exploration sites and operating mines. In year two, participants apply both traditional knowledge and scientific methods through fieldwork and geochemical analysis, building the skills needed to engage with industry and to support informed land use decisions.
My name is Dawn Mills, and I'm currently an adjunct at the UBC Mining Engineering Department in APSCI, the Applied Science Faculty. And I have been working with the Gitxigugla community and their desire to look at the land or read the land